It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it is sunny, 39 degrees. We're looking for a high of 44 today. Northwest wind gusting to 20. Clear skies tonight. Those northwest winds continuing, gusting to 30 tonight. And sunny skies tomorrow, too, with a high near 42. Northwest winds turning to the south tomorrow afternoon and bringing us some rain Saturday night. Coming up on the Midday Report, a hopeful-looking decrease in COVID-19 cases in Alaska has stalled. Former Anchorage Assembly members react to the recent rancor at their meetings. And an Alaska state trooper based in Soldotna has been arrested on charges he sexually abused two girls. Those stories, plus federal aviation regulators have announced recommendations about flying in Alaska, but they aren't imposing any new safety rules. Stay tuned for those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Vaccinated people looking to get a booster shot may soon be able to add Johnson & Johnson to the list. NPR's Rob Stein reports advisors to the FDA voted today to recommend the agency clear the J&J product as a follow-up shot that could be administered just a couple of months after the initial dose.
The FDA advisors voted unanimously to recommend the agency authorize a booster for the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The second shot would be for anyone ages 18 and older who got their first shot at least 2 months ago. The FDA has to accept the committee's recommendation, but the agency usually does. The recommendation came a day after the same committee endorsed boosters for the Moderna vaccine. A Pfizer booster has already been authorized. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will consider the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson boosters next week. Rob Stein, NPR News.
Flags across Britain are flying at half-staff in memory of a longtime member of parliament who was killed today. Investigators say Sir David Amos was stabbed to death while he was holding a public meeting at a church east of London. Amos was a member of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative Party.
David was a man who believed passionately in this country and in its future. And we've lost today a fine public servant and a much-loved friend and colleague. And our thoughts are very much today with his wife, his children, and his family.
Amos was the second British lawmaker in 5 years killed while meeting with constituents. Former Prime Minister Theresa May says this is, quote, a tragic day for our democracy. In the U.S. investigation into an attack many described as an assault on this country's democracy, a veteran U.S. Capitol Police officer has been arrested and charged with obstruction of justice in connection with the January 6th insurrection. As NPR's Tom Dreisbach reports, the officer is accused of telling one of the suspected rioters to hide evidence of their involvement.
Officer Michael A. Riley has been with the Capitol Police for nearly 25 years. Prosecutors say in the days after the Capitol riot, he saw on Facebook that someone had posted selfies and other pictures inside the Capitol building during the attack. And rather than bring that information to the FBI, the officer allegedly messaged the suspect several times and told them to hide the pictures and the posts. At one point, prosecutors say the officer told the suspect, quote, I'm a Capitol Police officer who agrees with your political stance. When the suspect was arrested, Officer Riley allegedly deleted all of his own messages. He's now facing two counts of obstruction of justice and has been placed on administrative leave. Tom Dreisbach, NPR News.
The Dow is now up 382 points before the close. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
An apparent decrease in COVID-19 cases in Alaska over the last several weeks appears to have stalled. Alaska reported 964 new resident COVID cases on Thursday. The number of cases over the past week has increased by 8% over the previous week, although it's still about a third less than it was during the week before.
We're calling it a plateau at this point.
State epidemiologist Joe McLaughlin, speaking at a news conference on Thursday, said the high rate of COVID hospitalizations and deaths in Alaska will likely continue.
So what we can expect with respect to hospitalizations is probably something similar to what we've seen in the recent days and weeks. As soon as we do start to see a notable decline in cases, then we expect that we will see a concomitant decrease in hospitalizations.
December of last year was the deadliest of the pandemic in Alaska so far, but as more deaths are reported, September could end up surpassing it. Health officials say that before the Delta variant, there was usually a delay between a rise in cases and a rise in hospitalizations. With the Delta variant, that's changed, says Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink.
We continually see people in the emergency department who are unvaccinated, who show up, who never got tested. And so their first presentation is when they become hospitalized.
The state has enacted crisis standards for 20 hospitals, which protect them from liability when they're forced to ration care. Zink says another hospital has requested coverage under those standards. But Zink says a recent influx of hundreds of out-of-state health workers has helped hospitals restore some care that was being rationed, like dialysis treatment. Hearings held on the mask mandate in Anchorage in the last week have become bitter, with mask opponents sometimes insulting and jeering as they testified. Assembly members from years gone by have watched with horror. They say the tone of public discourse in the city has changed. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
How long do you think we're going to take this? How long do you think this is going to stand?
The public testimony over the mandate got so nasty, it's drawn national attention. MSNBC host Rachel Maddow played some of it on her show Thursday night.
So the Anchorage Assembly meetings, we watched hours and hours of the streaming footage from those meetings, and the anger and the overt threats.
Fred Dyson says it didn't used to be like this. He served on the Assembly for 9 years and spent 18 years in the legislature. He's a conservative. He says he made friends, real friends, with liberals, lawmakers like Eric Croft and Ethan Berkowitz, whose views are far to the left of his own.
I see most of them as good-hearted and really wanting to do the right thing. And from my perspective, they might be misguided, but I don't ascribe to them evil intentions.
Dyson says he's not sure he would have voted for the mask mandate, but unlike the loudest mask opponents in the assembly chamber, he doesn't doubt that the motivation behind the ordinance was a sincere desire to save lives. He also can't fault the assembly for passing the mandate as an emergency measure and avoiding yet another night of angry testimony.
I probably wouldn't have done it, and would have sentenced myself to more hours of being yelled at and so on, but I don't condemn them for having made that pragmatic decision.
That quality, seeing some wisdom in a position you oppose, that's old school Anchorage Assembly. All four former Assembly members interviewed for this story recalled heated disputes in the past over a civil rights ordinance, speed cameras, and who can forget cat licensing. But now they say there's much more distrust and vilification. They say it's seeped into Anchorage from the national scene, and they do not approve.
I just don't believe this is my community.
Heather Flynn is a liberal who served on the assembly for most of the 1980s with conservatives like Craig Campbell and Larry Baker.
They didn't rant and call names. They didn't demean those who were opposed to them. We may have voted on opposite sides of issues, but they behaved appropriately in public. In fact, even in private. So I just don't understand what is going on in our community, in our state, in the country.
Flynn apportions some of the blame to Mayor Dave Bronson for encouraging the anti-mask crowds and defending their appropriation of a Holocaust symbol, the Star of David, in one of the most raucous nights of public testimony. Bronson later apologized for that and also issued an appeal for calm. Former Assemblyman Dick Traney says mask opponents were mad before and their anger has only grown since the Assembly passed the mandate as an emergency measure. He lays blame for the out-of-control public hearings on the Assembly for letting decorum slip. Traney served for nearly 20 years and was Assembly chairman five times.
You know, it's much like a courtroom. That's the way I always ran it anyway. It was like a courtroom. There's things you don't do in a courtroom, there's things you don't do at the Assembly chambers. It requires both the Assembly and the public to respect each other.
As for ways to end the nastiness, former Assembly members say people on the left and right and on both sides of the dais need to open their ears and hearts and assume even their opponents want a better anchorage. Fred Dyson gets the last word.
I say that the disgusting thing about my critics is how often they're right. And I really impoverish my own life and my effectiveness if I don't listen carefully to my critics and sort through that information and consider their viewpoint. And I wish that everybody would do that.
For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
An Alaska state trooper based in Soldotna is jailed on charges he sexually abused two girls, and authorities are asking the public for information about other possible victims. 39-year-old Benjamin Strahan was arrested Wednesday on one count of sexual abuse in the first degree and six counts in the second degree. Strahan moved to Soldotna to be an Alaska State Trooper in June 2020. Assistant Attorney General Jenna Grunstein with the state's Office of Special Prosecutions said at Strahan's initial court appearance Thursday that the abuse of one of the victims was contained to one night. The other spanned over a year.
The counts that are before the court currently are representative. They're not encompassing all of the alleged activity because, frankly, there were just too many instances to charge each count and each activity separately.
According to charging documents, one of the alleged victims, a 14-year-old, told her parents that Strahan had sexually abused her in February. The charges say she told her parents about the incident months after it happened, after attending a class about not being ashamed to talk about experiences with abuse. The alleged victim's parents reported the incident to Kenai Police Saturday night, and the case was referred to the Alaska State Troopers the next morning. Because Strahan was assigned to the Soldotna Post, the charges say troopers referred the case to the Wasilla Child Abuse Investigation Unit. The alleged victim also told investigators she had seen Strahan inappropriately touch another girl. The charges say further investigation revealed a longer-term pattern of sexual abuse. Public Safety Commissioner Jim Cockrell, himself a Soldotna resident, said at a press conference Wednesday he was sickened by the allegations.
I would like to acknowledge the victim for having the bravery to come forward and bring these allegations to light. Anyone who believes they may have been a victim of Strahan or has information that would be helpful to the investigation is encouraged to contact the Alaska State Troopers in Soldotna.
The judge at Strahan's court appearance Thursday deemed him a flight risk as he has few ties to the community and set bail at $200,000 cash. According to the Department of Public Safety, Strahan is on administrative leave without pay. He remained in custody Thursday at the Wildwood Correctional Center. The Alaska State Troopers say they are investigating whether there are other victims and are asking those with more information to call the Soldotna office at 907-262-4453. Federal aviation regulators have announced some recommendations to make flying in Alaska safer. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, it's an attempt to address Alaska's outsized share of crashes, but the agency is stopping short of imposing new safety rules on the industry.
There have been at least 21 people killed in plane crashes in the Ketchikan area alone since 2015. So the Federal Aviation Administration has been expected to roll out some safety improvements ever since federal crash investigators convened a roundtable meeting on Alaska air charter safety back in 2019. First on the list of recommendations is adding to and improving the FAA's network of weather stations to offer real-time data to pilots.
When I was in flight school, I'd fly from Vero Beach to Savannah, Georgia for some sweet tea and pecan pie, and it's about 270 miles, and you have no less than 15 weather reporting stations.
That's Lee Ryan, whose Ryan Air serves more than 70 small Alaska communities.
When I go home to Unalakleet, Anchorage to Unalakleet, it's about 340 miles, you have four weather reporting stations in that distance.
Another recommendation to the FAA is to encourage carriers to equip their planes with an early warning system to prevent mid-air collisions and other types of crashes. The technology, known as Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, or ADS-B, transmits info about the plane's position, altitude, and speed to nearby aircraft, along with ground stations and satellites. But the FAA stopped short of a rule that would require carriers to install the systems. One of the FAA's lawyers on the line, Howard Martin, says new regulations were outside the scope of the initiative.
This was not a rulemaking process, so it went outside of our charter, what we were supposed to do. Those recommendations would be handled through a separate process.
And that means the FAA's recommendations don't include two big priorities long pushed for by the National Transportation Safety Board, which investigates crashes. Those include safety management systems, they're essentially risk management protocols for airlines, and data recording devices for all planes that carry paying passengers. Congressman Don Young, who was on the FAA call with reporters, said he's glad to see regulators in the industry come out with practical recommendations.
You came to the table with ideas. I go through this life with everybody, not everybody, a lot of people bitching, don't have any suggestions. And you came forth with some good suggestions, put them together, and you have made a good report present to the general public and to the Congress.
He encouraged the FAA to request additional funding for Alaska safety upgrades in the president's next budget. FAA Administrator Steve Dixon told reporters Thursday that Alaska is unique in that many communities aren't served by roads year-round.
Now, because of this partnership and this collaboration, we have a set of thoughtful, specific recommendations about how to improve safety in the state, where more than 80% of communities are accessible only by air travel.
Absent from the rollout was the Transportation Safety Board, which investigates crashes. In a statement, NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy called the FAA's recommendations a step forward, but she said there's still more improvements to be done for Alaska. The FAA says it's addressing some of the NTSB's remaining top recommendations in a separate process. The FAA is slated to propose new rules for charter and air tour operators next fall, according to a notice in the Federal Register. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is beginning its next review of polar bears' status under the Endangered Species Act. The review happens every 5 years, and it could result in polar bears being uplisted to endangered. Aaron Knoll, the Threatened and Endangered Species Coordinator for the Fish and Wildlife Service's Alaska region, says polar bears listing as threatened already affords them many protections under the Endangered Species Act, and there are protections under other laws, too. But she says those only go so far. That's because, as the initial 2008 listing decision notes, the melting of the polar bear's sea ice habitat due to human-induced climate change is their main threat.
Under the Endangered Species Act, we don't have the authority to regulate those greenhouse gas emissions. And similarly, in the listing rule, we noted that there wasn't a regulation at the national or international level that directly and effectively address the primary threat to polar bears, which is that range-wide loss of sea ice habitat, and this still holds true today.
Knoll says that while polar bears' status as a threatened species often draws a lot of attention, it's too early to say what recommendations might come out of the review or what implications they might have. As part of the review, Knoll says the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is looking for any new research on polar bears since the last review in 2017, including about their habitat or threats they face. She says any recommendations based on the review will then go through a public comment period.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Dungeness is now Alaska's biggest crab fishery. More fishing updates after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Bering Sea Fisheries for 5.6 million pounds of snow crab and just over 1 million pounds for tanners open today, but little action typically doesn't occur until January. That could change with the huge demand for crab combined with the cancellation of the Bristol Bay Red King crab fishery. Golden King crab has been ongoing along the Aleutian Islands since August with a quota of about 6 million pounds, and it's hard to believe, but Dungeness is now Alaska's largest crab fishery. Combined catches so far this year for Southeast, Kodiak, Chignik, and the Alaska Peninsula total just under 10 million pounds, with several weeks of fishing left to go. A herring food and bait fishery opened October 1st near Craig and Kloak in Southeast. Southeast spot shrimp fishery wrapped up with the catch of more than 457,000 pounds. Beam trawlers are still targeting 650,000 pounds of northern pink shrimp. Southeast's sea cucumber fishery opened on October 4th with a catch limit of over 1.8 million pounds. Diving is still ongoing for gooey duck clams. And sea cuke fisheries also are underway at Kodiak, Chignik, and the South Peninsula. Halibut catches have topped 15 million pounds, with about 3.5 million pounds left to go. For sablefish, 60% of the 43.4 million pound quota has been taken. Both of those fisheries are open until December 7. Fishing continues for pollock, cod, flounders, and many other species in the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea. Finally, preliminary numbers for Alaska's 2021 salmon catch total nearly 222 million fish. That's 32 million more than projected. Fish and Game will provide breakdowns and values by region any day. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods in Kodiak. I'm Lainey Welch.
Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Island Messenger. Today is Friday, the 15th of October, 2021. The sun rose today at 8:45, and it will set tonight at 7:03. And it will rise again tomorrow at 8:47. For Kodiak District tides, we had a high tide at 11:45 a.m. of 7 feet, a low tide at 5:17 p.m. of 3.3 feet, a high tide at 11:12 p.m. of 7.9 feet, a low tide at 5:55 a.m. of 0.6 feet, and a high tide at 12:30 p.m. of 7.7 feet. For the west side tides, at high tide at 12:10 p.m. of 11.4 feet, a low tide at 6:07 p.m. of 4.6 feet, a high tide at 11:47 p.m. of 11.7 feet, a low tide at 6:29 a.m. of 0.8 feet, and a high tide at 12:59 p.m. of 12.6 feet. We had a total of 10 hours and 18 minutes of daylight today, a loss of 4 minutes and 53 seconds. The record high was 58 degrees in 1921, and the record low was 17 degrees in 1927. Mostly cloudy at present, 43 degrees Fahrenheit here in Kodiak. For this afternoon, sunny with a high near 44. A northwest wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear with a low around 33. A northwest wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 30 miles per hour. For Saturday, sunny with a high near 42, a northwest wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming south in the afternoon. For Saturday night, rain mainly after 11 p.m., a low around 37, a south wind of 10 to 20 miles per hour increasing to 20 to 30 miles per hour after midnight. Winds could gust as high as 40 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 100%. For Sunday rain, the rain could be heavy at times, a high near 46, a southeast wind of 40 to 45 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 55 miles per hour. Chance precipitation is 100%. Sunday night, rain, the rain could be heavy at times, a low around 41, east wind of 35 to 40 miles per hour, chance precipitation is 100%, and for Monday, rain with a high near 48, chance of precipitation is 80%. For marine weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, a small craft advisory through tonight. Today, a northwest wind of 15 knots, increasing to 25 knots in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, a northwest wind of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. And Saturday, a northwest wind of 20 knots, becoming southwest 15 knots in the afternoon, seas to 6 feet. Saturday night, southeast wind of 45 knots, seas to 10 feet. Sunday, an east wind of 45 knots, seas to 21 feet. Monday, a north wind of 40 knots, seas to 21 feet. And Tuesday, a north wind of 30 knots, seas to 18 feet. For the Shelikof Strait, a small craft advisory through tonight. For today, a northwest wind of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet. Tonight, a northwest wind of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet. Saturday, a northwest wind of 20 knots, becoming southwest 15 knots in the afternoon, seas to 4 feet. Saturday night, a southeast wind of 40 knots, seas to 8 feet. Sunday, a northeast wind of 50 knots, seas to 17 feet. Monday, north wind of 35 knots, seas to 12 feet. And Tuesday, a north wind of 20 knots, seas to 5 feet. For some community bulletins, the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary will be meeting Saturday, October 16th, beginning at 10 a.m. If you are a KHA member, your Zoom invitation will be emailed to you. If you are not a member but are interested in joining our meeting, please send us an email with your request to Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary at gmail.com. That's KODIAKHOSPIATAL, Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary, AUXILIARY, at gmail.com. They will then send you a Zoom invitation. The Alaska Redistricting Board is in charge of drawing new maps for legislative seats every 10 years. As a part of that process, the board is traveling around the state to get feedback on 6 proposed new maps. The Kodiak community is invited to come and share their thoughts on Friday, October 15th from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Afognet Building, 300 Alamac Way, Alamac Drive. More information is available at akredistrict.org. Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting on October 18th of 2021, beginning at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans. Meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website, www.kibsd.org, under the Board of Education tab. Seating in the conference room will be limited to accommodate social distancing recommendations and available on a first-come, first-serve basis. Face coverings will be required for all in attendance. The meeting agenda and packet for this meeting can be viewed on Board Docs. That's www.boarddocs.com/ak/kodiak/board.nsf/public. For more information, contact Bianca Clark, Secretary to the Board of Education, at 907-486-7566. The agendas are subject to change, therefore, the only official agenda is the one found online. And the next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will be at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, October 21st, via conference. If you would like to attend the meeting, please contact Mike Wall at gm@kmxt.org for link information. The public is welcome to attend.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the October 15th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Anyone who woke up in Kodiak this morning is fairly certain of one thing. We are edging into the cooler days of autumn slash winter. The proverbial frost was on the pumpkin this morning. When I let my dog out in the wee hours of the morning today, I glanced up at the sky, seeing two very familiar constellations that stay with us all winter, the Big Dipper and Cassiopeia. These beauties will circle the dome of the sky throughout the night and throughout the next several months while we have dark skies. The Dipper points to the North Star, guiding mariners and night travelers since time began. Cassiopeia, which is directly across from the Big Dipper overhead, is the constellation that looks a little like a wonky W or M, depending on the time of night you're looking at it. Look up tonight, you'll find it. And once you've seen it, Cassiopeia is easier to find the next time. The color of the clouds in the sky is what drew me to the boat storage area on Near Island Thursday evening. I came down there hoping to get some photos of the changing sky as the sun dropped behind the mountains. I soon realized there was an even better show going on right in front of me in the water. The orcas were back and they were in a frenzy. There were at least five of them, including a couple of younger ones. They were there to hunt, and they were successful. These wild kingdom moments that happen right in front of you are at once magnificent, gruesome, awe-inspiring, and sobering. But they are all part of the circle of life. And I count myself very lucky to live where I can easily see nature at work every day. The orcas often stay around for a few days, so your chances of seeing them over the next couple of days in the channel or along the waterfront are fairly good. Good luck. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.